Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
Chris, let me first thank you, you know, right off the bat for letting me interview you. I know the school year just started up there in Tennessee, and things are incredibly hectic. So I'm very grateful that you found a little time for us.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I'm way down here in Florida, and I got to say, from afar, it looks to me like you're engaged in a pretty big experiment, and it has a big school choice component. So can you briefly explain to our listeners what the Achievement School District in Tennessee is all about and how school choice fits into that?
Sure. So the Achievement School District was created as part of Tennessee's Race to the Top application. So for the sake of the listeners, Tennessee was one of the first two states to win Race to the Top, along with Delaware. And you know, there were different components to the application, and one of them was, what's the state going to do for those persistently lowest performing schools? So those schools that fall in the bottom 5% in student achievement, and really just year after year after year are on whatever priority list, you know, the state was creating. And so in Tennessee, that represents 85 schools. And our job through the legislation was to figure out a way to turn those schools around. And the charge that we've kind of created for ourselves and the goal that we've set is to move the schools from the bottom 5% to the top 25% in the state over the next 5 years, which is about 8 to 10 point student achievement gains in math and reading is what we would need to do in order to do that, which we felt like was a doably ambitious goal. And so what we launched this past Monday were the first set of schools. So rather than trying to take on all 85 at once, which we thought was kind of a fool's errand, we decided to take the first chunk of schools. And three of the six schools we are running ourselves, almost like creating our own charter management organization, if you will. And then the other part of our strategy is to work with charter partners to charter some of the lowest performing schools. So we have three schools that were in the bottom 5% that were phasing in charter schools to eventually run those schools. I guess the last thing I'd say is that the 85 schools are heavily clustered in Memphis. So 69 of the 85 schools are located in Memphis. There's a small group in Nashville and a smaller group in Chattanooga.
Okay.
And so our footprint right now is mainly in Nashville and in Memphis.
Well, what are you going to be doing with your six schools that you're starting off with that is so different from what the schools were doing before? I'm sure there are many things, but can you just hit on a few things that are going to allow you to get that traction to, you know, move from the bottom 5% to the top 25%?
Sure. So I think what we're, you know, my background is in charter school. So I, you know, started Yes Prep in Houston, ran it for 13 years. Grew it from a single campus to 11 schools. And so what we're doing is taking a lot of the pages from the Yes Prep or really any high-performing charter management organization playbook. And I think, you know, you mentioned experiment. I think the experiment is, does that playbook work in an environment where the kids don't get to choose the school, where we now become the neighborhood school? And if I were thinking about the key pieces of the playbook, I think one is a big investment in people. So all the folks that were in the school, the three schools that we're running, and really the charter schools too, had to apply with us for a position. And we hired a couple of teachers. Most of the teachers chose not to apply. But we hired a few, and then went out and recruited, you know, the best teachers in Memphis that we could find to work in our school. So the three schools that we're running are all in Memphis. So one is just a big investment in people and a very rigorous selection process for the folks that are working in the school. Second thing we're doing is we're extending the day. So we're adding about an hour and a half to the school day. A school day in Memphis for elementary and middle school kids starts at 7:15. And ends at 2:15, and our school day goes from 8 to 4:30. So we're adding significant instructional time. We're also extending the school year. So I think, in short, it's this idea of great teaching and more of it. Let's get great people, highly effective teachers, and leaders in front of our kids, and let's extend the amount of time our kids have with those guys. And I think the third thing is, rather than creating, you know, a command and control type of organization, which is what you see in a lot of school districts where, you know, superintendents or people in the central office are having to make curriculum decisions or decisions about program, you know, across all the schools. One, we get to focus on a very specific type of school, which is a school that's in the bottom 5%. So we're not trying to figure out what we're doing for all the schools. But more importantly, we're pushing those decisions around people and program and resources down to the school and really letting teacher leaders and leaders of the school make those decisions instead of trying to do them from the central office. And we believe that if you get the right people in place and you give them the flexibility and autonomy they need to be effective, that that's how we're going to move schools, and that's how we're going to, you know, move these schools from the bottom 5% to the top 25%.
Okay. Why did you pick the three charter schools that you did? I mean, what was so attractive about them? What did they offer that you thought would be a perfect fit with what you're doing?
Sure. So there were two reasons. One, we had a pretty short timeline in terms of authorizing these guys because I started literally a year ago. August 1st last year was my first day. And we wanted to do a short authorization process to get the first group of schools authorized, but also give them enough time to plan and be ready to open. So the three groups, the three first groups that we authorized were all from Tennessee. So since then, we've recruited some organizations, charter groups that are outside the state to come. But this first group were all homegrown charter management organizations, groups that were already running one or two schools and looking to grow. And then the second thing was they were already running schools. They had a track record. We could, you know, see their schools, look at their results. We weren't taking big risks with this first group with folks that had never opened a school before. And we felt like for this first round of authorization that it was important to find folks that had already been doing this work and had the kind of track record of results that we felt like were going to create the kind of schools that we wanted to create for the kids and families and the communities that we're working in right now.
Okay, so they all had experience and they all had some results you could see. You weren't rolling the dice on any of them.
Right.
Okay. I want to go back real quick to your 5% to bottom 5% to top 25% goal. And I mean, when some people hear this, I'm sure there's some people who are going to go, you know, you go, man, that's perfect. You know, they're setting the goal high. And I can hear other people going, oh, you know, good luck with that, bro. There's just no way they're going to be able to move it that far in that short a time. That's a pretty high bar, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I think, you know, it makes me think about when we first started Yes Prep back in 1998, when we wrote our charter, we made one of our graduation requirements that every single kid would get accepted to a four-year college. And these were kids where, you know, 95%, you know, low-income minority, the sixth graders that when we tracked, you know, from previous cohorts had like a 7% chance of finishing a four-year school. So when we told people this goal of every kid getting accepted to college, you know, it was kind of the reaction you just talked about. Everyone was like, that sounds great, and it's probably never going to happen. And what we proved was that it was possible. I mean, we graduated our first group of kids. We've graduated 11 classes from Yes Prep since then. And our kids have all met that bar. You know, not every kid's going to Harvard, but every kid, and we actually have gotten kids into Harvard, but, you know, we felt like that there was a college out there for every kid, and if we were working with kids in 6th grade through 12th grade, that they could hit that goal. And to me, this is the same thing. You know, it's an ambitious goal, but it's one that we think is doable. We actually spent a good amount of time looking at the data and looking at what kind of gains schools around the state were making. You know, there were schools making 15, 20-point gains. And so we know that 8 to 10 points is doable. I think the question is, can we sustain that level of growth for, you know, a five-year period and move the schools out of the bottom 5%? And I guess the last thing I'd say on that is that, you know, the other reason I think this is important is because when you start creating lists like this, what ends up happening is you create this perverse incentive where schools are celebrating getting out of the bottom 5%. Mm-hmm. And getting out of the bottom 5% and being a great school is not the same thing. It could be, but if all you've done is now get into the bottom 7%, then that's still a lousy school that none of us would feel comfortable sending our kids to. And so what we wanted to do was really make a statement and say, look, this isn't just about getting schools out of the bottom 5%. This is about creating really good schools, schools that anybody from any background would feel comfortable sending their kids to, and that's the goal that we've set for ourselves. And we feel like that our kids and the community deserves nothing less than that, and that's what we're working towards.
Okay. You mentioned in a op-ed for the, I believe it was the Memphis paper that I read recently, that you were doing a lot of reach out to parents.
Mm-hmm.
What more specifically are you doing? I mean, what does this reach out look like, and what's the goal here?
Sure. Well, you know, kind of starting back from the Yes Prep days, you know, home visits were an important part of what we did to begin to build the relationship with families that we felt like was an important part of how you make sure that kids are prepared to go to college, and that we're getting the right support from home to be able to do that. And so, again, we wanted to take that page out of the playbook and modify it for what we were doing here in the context here in Tennessee. And so, you know, one of the first things we did, so our teachers came back July 9th. They came back almost a month before the beginning of school. And the first week, we loaded all of our teachers up on buses, and we did community walks. We hit all the apartment complexes. We banged on doors.
Wow.
We met. And we invited them to come out to a community picnic that we were having later that week on a Saturday. And so, you know, the first interaction that many of the parents and folks in the community had with us was in an environment that they were comfortable with in the doorway to their apartment or house. And we weren't talking to them because their kids had gotten in trouble. We were talking about coming out to a party to bring their kids to learn more about the school and to meet our staff. And then that Saturday, we had a huge community picnic. We had, you know, climbing walls and jumpy castles and laser tag and music and food, and just had a big, started with a big celebration, a big party, so that we could get to know the community could get to know us. You know, in addition to that, you know, a lot of my time was spent sitting down with people in the community, explaining who we were. You know, the word state takeover was what was used a lot when this initially got off the ground. And what we tried to assure folks was that this wasn't a takeover. This was a chance to reform and change the school, and that we were going to be working, you know, directly with the community, that this wasn't going to be some initiative just happening out in Nashville where folks saw us once a year, and really tried to explain why we chose the schools that we chose. And so there were months spent on the front end with community leaders, well, really with anybody that would sit down and talk to us so that we could introduce ourselves, explain to them what we were doing, explain to them what I'd done in Houston and how it was relevant to this, so that they knew, you know, my background and the team that we were putting together here. And I think that work at both kind of the community leadership level, but really down, you know, on the ground, in the weeds, with parents, has really, you know, made a difference. You know, in a lot of places where you see this type of work happening, you know, you see parents outside the school protesting and just the community up in arms over you know, this type of effort. And we've not only not seen that, we've actually been embraced by the community leaders and by the parents.
So the reception was good right off the bat?
It was cautious optimism at first, and that's all we really asked for. You know, we weren't asking for folks to come in and cheerlead for us because we haven't done anything yet. We haven't gotten any results. What we asked for was the opportunity to give us a chance to do the work, and I think that's what the community's done. They've met us halfway. You know, we've got the school open now. We're on our fourth day of the year, and now it's on us to perform and get some results. And so I think that the community's reacted in a very balanced and appropriate and thoughtful way, and we're just excited to have the opportunity.
Okay. Well, Chris, I'd like to ask you this one last question and switch gears on you slightly. So, you know, we've had Yes Preps and KIPP schools for 15 to 20 years now, and we have, you know, a pretty good body of evidence that they're working really well. And yet I look around my part of the country and I really don't see much, if anything, that looks like a KIPP school or a Yes Prep or some of these other high-performing charters that I read about. Why don't we have more schools like that? Why aren't there schools like Yes Prep and KIPP popping up in the Tampa Bay Area or in all these other places where they're still not there? What's taken so long?
That's a great question. I think there's a couple things. One, I think that, you know, it hasn't really been until the last, I'd say, 3 to 5 years that the schools have been operating with anything that looks like scale. It took several years to get the first kind of prototype open and up and running and for folks to figure out how to replicate. And I think now folks are figuring that out and are replicating more quickly. So I think over the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see, you know, the implications of that. I think secondly, it's still too easy for folks that want to, you know, act as the naysayers around all this work to point to, you know, charter schools cream and this only works for some kids and that sort of thing. And so I think it's that's created difficulty for this to get traction and for folks to inside traditional systems to really embrace what I think are lessons learned and how this can get applied at a larger level. Now, you're starting to see that change. I mean, you're seeing, you know, things in Denver and things in Houston where there's efforts being made by the district to try and take the practices of the best charters and best charter organizations and try and apply them in a larger system. And I think, you know, what's happening in New Orleans around the Recovery School District, what we're hopefully going to be able to achieve here is an opportunity to say, look, this works, and it works at scale with you know, in a neighborhood school environment. And I think that's what, you know, attracted me to this job was that there's an opportunity here to say, look, we're not creating the charter school that's going to be across the street from the public school and slowly bleed it to death. What we're saying is this is the neighborhood school. So to me, this is charter school version 3.0, which is, you know, you don't get to pick the kids. The kids don't get to pick you. If we really believe this works, we're going to phase you in, and you're now the neighborhood school. And you've got to work with all the kids, SPED, you know, whatever kids show up with, you have to serve those kids. And I think 20 years in, it's now time for all of us in the charter school community, all of us in the choice community to step up and say, you know what, if we really are going to put our money where our mouth is, now is the time for version 3.0. And version 3.0 is we are the neighborhood school. And to me, if we can pull that off, I think it's going to send it's going to make a huge statement that will hopefully accelerate things like this in your backyard and in other places around the country.
Okay. Well, I hope so. Well, Chris, this is great. Thanks again for all your time. You know, I really admire what you're doing. And I'm really grateful that you found some time for us. So good luck to you and everything you're doing up there.
Thank you. Thanks again for the opportunity to have more people learn about it.
Okay. Take care.